Hi, everybody, and welcome to a very special teleseminar today. We have brought all of our companies together because the information that we're going to share is applicable to each. So welcome to folks who are Speaker Match members who are listening in today. Also, welcome to the folks from Guest Match, our online media kit service, and, of course, our clients with Allen Media Strategies, Media Marketing, and Public Relations Firm. I'm Burke Allen in Washington, D.C., and our special guest today is my friend Bill O'Hanlon, who has a pretty remarkable career doing the things that many of us on this call aspire to do more of. Bill is a speaker, a fee-based speaker who speaks all over the country. I looked at his calendar earlier today, and he has speaking engagements in lots of swanky places all year long already on his calendar. He's also a published author. When I say a published author, not a self-published author, this is a guy who has written nearly 30 books now, all, I believe, with major publishing houses. And as well, Bill has hit what is sort of the brass ring of public relations. He's been a guest on the Oprah Winfrey Show, along with the Today Show and a bunch of other television, radio, and print appearances. So, Bill O'Hanlon, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Burke. It's great to be here. Yeah, it's 31 books going on, 32. I always joke, stop me before I write again. I don't know what it is. I was not a natural writer, and I've just gotten into it, and I learned how to do it, which is partly the thing. And also, I learned how to get published. I learned how to write, and I learned to get published, which are two different skills, I think.
Well, I want to touch on each of these things, and I'm going to ask you a lot of the tough questions in this hour. We want to make this as user-friendly and as actionable as possible on the call. Right. And by the way, for folks who are listening to the call live this afternoon, if you hit *2, you can raise your virtual hand there and ask a question of Bill or myself, and we'll be happy to answer them. There are no such things as stupid questions on this call. It would just be stupid to not ask questions when you've got a couple of media-savvy guys like Bill and I on the call ready to spill our guts for you. And also, there will be lots of folks who listen to the podcast later on iTunes, and we certainly appreciate that as well. If you're mic shy, well, we're going to teach you how to get over that. But if you are mic shy for today, you can type your questions in as well, and we'll be happy to ask Bill. Let's rewind a year or two and take you back to the beginning of your journey as an author and a speaker. How did it all start?
Well, it's more than a year or two. That may carbon date me, but it's been 20 or 30 years, actually, that I've been doing this. This is a strange way to start in some ways, but I was a shy person who didn't like to speak in front of people, would get gastrointestinal symptoms when I had to stand up in front of people, and I wasn't a natural writer. I didn't ever have any desire to write books. And now 31 books later, somehow I got over that. But and I teach two or three times a month all around the world. I'm in Marco Island right now teaching for 5 days at a major conference. And what happened for me was, this is a weird thing to say, but I got pissed off. That's what started me. I was trained as a psychotherapist. I didn't like what was happening in my field, and I was insulted by some of the things that I heard people saying about clients and patients that I just disagreed with highly. And, you know, I just got angry about, this isn't the way it should be done. I got this righteous indignation, and I was so passionate, and I also was excited about some approaches to change that I had learned about. I studied with this very eccentric psychiatrist who died in 1980, Milton Erickson, and he warped me the rest of my career because he believed that people could change, and he was an endlessly creative guy about getting people to change. So then when I went into the field and I found that most of my colleagues didn't believe people could change or change very quickly, and I thought they were being disrespectful and also discouraging to people, that I was so excited about his work and other work that I come across that I thought was effective, and I was so pissed off about the ineffective and sometimes disrespectful approaches that I overcame my shyness and my lack of writing ability, and I'd never known anybody who had written a book or gotten a book published, and I just persisted until I became a paid speaker and could influence the field, and then I went beyond it to write books for the general public, which is what landed me on Oprah. So.
Wow. And you're up to 32 books now.
Yep.
You talked about your credentialing. You're a psychoanalyst. Is that right?
A psychotherapist. Not exactly the opposite of a psychoanalyst, because that's one of the things that pissed me off. I thought, it doesn't take people decades. You know, like Woody Allen has that joke in the Annie Hall movie. He says, And she finds out she's from the Midwest and he's from New York, and she finds out he's been in therapy for like 15 years and he's still all messed up. And she goes, 15 years? He said, yes, I'm giving it 20 years, and if it hasn't worked, I'm going to Lourdes. So that's psychoanalysis. That's long-term, go back to your childhood. I had a much more practical, and partly, again, that I learned from Dr. Erickson, approach to fairly quick change called brief therapy and solution-oriented therapy. I created an approach to using people's strengths rather than analyzing what went wrong with them, not going back to their childhood, but starting in the present toward the future. And again, that's what pissed me off, because I would go into the field and people would say, oh, people are, they don't want to change. They like being sick. They like, you know, being miserable, and they're not going to change for decades, you know. And I was like, decades? I mean, if the person's suffering, they should get some help right now. So I became passionate about this stuff. So I was trained as a psychotherapist, not as a psychoanalyst, and I'm sort of on the opposite end of the spectrum from psychoanalysis.
Well, it sounds like a much more user-friendly medium and something that gets things done. And it's also, frankly, it's some great credentialing for you. So do you feel like, honestly, Bill, that the fact that you're credentialed has helped things along in terms of getting these book deals or getting the media? Or do you think you really have to be credentialed in some way to be able to speak or write?
Well, no and yes, I guess I would say. Okay. Two answers to that. And that is, you know, I think an illustrative story, we'll talk about how I got on Oprah in a little while, but I think an illustrative story is how I got my first speaking engagements and how I got my first book contract. And the both will teach, I think, people on both of these, in both of these areas, or obviously many people combine speaking and writing books. But, you know, the first thing was, when I got the call, you know, when I decided, okay, who do people in my field listen to? They listen to the speakers and the writers. They listen to the experts. But I'm just this unknown guy. Nobody's known me. Nobody's inviting me to speak. Nobody's inviting me to teach and to write books. So I started self-sponsoring workshops. And I went all over the country to people, to places where I had people that I liked. I have a big family, so I visit my relatives who are spread all over the country. I had good friends, and my sister lived in Anchorage, Alaska. My best friend lived in Seattle. And I would travel there and teach workshops. Even if I lost a little money, you know, and it didn't make that much money, it was a tax-deductible visit to them. And I started gathering brochures from all these places. And then when I applied to be a speaker for people who paid, and I didn't have to, you know, organize the whole thing and pay, people were like, this guy is all over the place. He's in Kansas City, and he's in Omaha, and he's in Seattle, he's in New York City, and he's in Anchorage, Alaska, and he's in Phoenix, Arizona. He's a well-known speaker. Well, I wasn't that well-known, but I gathered evidence. And that's one of the pieces of advice. You know, you said, Burke, and you and I are both committed to this, giving away as much as we can in this short time and right, giving people practical action steps. One of the things that I've learned both about speaking and about book writing is, you know, I used to think, well, if I write a book or if I teach a workshop, people are going to love this idea and they're going to come along. Well, yes, partly. The idea is worth something, but it's your platform. And that's what you specialize in, Berg. You specialize in getting people known and developing their reputations and their credibility. And that's what I didn't know this because I was just stumbling around trying to get started. But it turns out that I saved every brochure from every workshop I went to. And when I sent them along to people who could pay money and hire me, they were impressed because I'd already done something in the world. More than that, I wasn't just claiming that I'd done it. I provided evidence that I'd done it. So that's what we call, you call, and I call platform. You're developing your platform. And the platform is literally, I mean, if you think of it as a metaphor, it's something that raises you above the other speakers or authors that are trying to get published or trying to get hired. Is you're building plank by plank a reputation, expertise, credibility. So some of your credibility could be your degree or your training. Some of your credibility could be you're a cancer survivor and you're writing a book or you're speaking about cancer. You went through it, so you have some credibility. But the other credibility is you've accomplished something. You've written a book. You've spoken before. You got rave reviews at this conference and somebody recommended you. A platform is your credibility, your accomplishments, your relationships, your visibility, and your expertise. So you're like this too, I know, but I say you carve your platform. You have credibility, accomplishments, relationships, visibility, which is what you're working on a lot besides credibility too, and then experience or expertise. So some of it could be, okay, you've got a degree. Some of it could be you write a book with someone who's got the credibility, who's been through the experience, who has the right degree, or who's had the experience. So you can carve your credibility by joining with other people and writing with their credibility. Like the person I saw a joke book when that Who Moved My Cheese was out.
Sure.
I saw a joke book that said, "Who cut the cheese?" You know, and it's like, okay, it's a silly little thing. But they're riding on the credibility of that author and the platform of that author. So, of course, you want to develop your own platform, but you can also ride on the person who does the Harry Potter encyclopedia is riding on J.R. Rowling's platform. So
sure.
You can, you know, and there's now in my field, there's a bunch of stuff about mindfulness coming out. So everybody's doing mindfulness and phobias and mindfulness and anxiety. They're riding on the platform of something that's well known. So you can develop a personal platform, a relationship platform, an associational platform, and you can build your own platform, obviously.
Bill O'Hanlon is our guest today. If you're just joining us, Bill is a published author of over 30 books now and a guy who gets speaking engagements, paid speaking engagements, on a consistent year-after-year basis. If you have any questions, you can hit star 2 to raise your virtual hand or type them in there, and we'll be sure to pepper Bill with those questions. Which came first for you, the speaking or the writing?
Speaking. And I promise I'd tell people how I got my first book contract, so we should get back to that. But that's
yes.
What happened. I spoke for 10 years because I just didn't think I could write a book. I just didn't think I was capable of it. I'm a little energetic, so it's hard for me to sit down. It's a little boring to write. I wasn't a natural writer. I wasn't a good writer. When I would try and write something that was in my heart and my mind, it would come out flat on the page, and I was discouraged. Plus, I didn't know the ins and outs of how to get published, which is a second skill, I think, for writers. One is the writing skill and the ability to sit down and write it and organize your thoughts and get your act together that way. But the second thing is there's the business of writing and the publicity of writing as you're, you know, speaking to people on both of these areas. And that I didn't know at all. So I spoke for 10 years, and people kept coming up to me, "Great stuff. Where's the book?" And no, I can't write. I can't write. I'm not good at it. I don't know how to do it. Where's the book? And, you know, there was so much pressure, and I knew that as soon as a book came out, my speaking fees would go up, my credibility would go up, my notoriety, my visibility would go up. So, yes, I should write a book. And so finally I went to a friend of mine who had edited a book, hadn't actually written one, but edited a book and gotten it published. And I said, you know, I got this thing. And he said, "Oh, Bill, you'll never get a book published without a PhD or an MD. I have a master's degree in my profession." And it's, you know, many people have PhDs, but not everybody, but a lot of people have MDs too, psychiatrists and psychologists. And I have a master's degree. So I'm a psychotherapist rather than a psychologist or psychiatrist. And he said, "You'll never get a book published without a PhD or an MD." And I was like, well, that wasn't the advice I was looking for. I was looking for encouragement. And
sure.
About a year later, I met with somebody at a conference who was a book publisher, and he said, "You know, you're an expert in this area. I wonder who's writing books in this area, because we want to publish some books in this area." And I said, "Well, so-and-so, because I was an expert, and I want to write a book in this area." He said, "You do?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, tell me about it." And I told him about it. He said, "Well, that sounds interesting. Write me a proposal, send it to me." And he sent me a book contract. And I was like, wow, you know, this is magical. How did this happen? And, you know, I thought, gee, I'm blessed. Years later, I thought it wasn't quite so magical. I was teaching two or three speaking engagements a month, where I saw anywhere between 40 people and 300 people. And sometimes I went to big conferences and gave keynotes, and I'd see 3,000 people. If he gave a contract to someone with a PhD or an MD who was in a hospital or in a university, they might see 200 people in a year because they teach in the university. I'm seeing thousands of people a year. He knows he can sell books. So, again, it went back to platform.
That's right.
I was doing something that made me visible, gave me some credibility, could get me to the audience that would buy the books, and he was happy to give me. He didn't care if I had a degree in dog catching as long as I could sell books. You know,
That's
and that
right.
was the second learning I had about visibility and platform and publicity and marketing is there's the one thing is the content of what you're doing. The second thing is, how do you get it out to people, and how do you make it financially viable and really, you know, and publicity viable?
Bill O'Hanlon is our guest today. He's talking about his incredible career of writing over 30 books that have been published and consistently, year in, year out, being able to generate these paid speaking engagements. And You've obviously learned a lot about how to do this and how not to do it. The building a platform piece absolutely works. Years ago, Bill, I worked with a rock band, Motley Crue, and those guys, before they were able to generate a contract with Elektra Records, they built their own platform by releasing their first album, which was actually a cassette then, on their own label, Leather Records. It sold 6,000 to people there around Santa Monica, enough for them to get the attention of the record label, who said, look, these guys have a platform. They're able to spread it out. You did very much the same thing as a speaker and an author. Give me a couple of the specifics on the author piece about getting your book published by a major publisher and sort of the steps that folks on this call should take.
My most of my books have been published by W.W. Norton, HarperCollins, Penguin, Rodale, which is publishes the health magazines, prevention and stuff like that.
Right.
And they're by major publishers, and Allen & Bacon and places like that. How did that happen? Well, first of all, again, I had the platform of speaking, and those, some of the people on here are going to speak and write. Some of you just want to speak, some of you just want to write. But I like the synergy between the two, because the more I spoke, the more I could sell my books. The more I sold my books, the more speaking engagements I got. I would get people that would contact me after 10 years of speaking, where I was traveling around the country speaking two or three times a month, and around the world occasionally, because I went internationally. And people would write me after my book came out saying, do you do speaking engagements? I read your book, and I'd like to have it come to my hospital or my association and speak for us. And I'm like, do I do? But that's what I mainly do. I'm, book writing is on the side. And then book writing became more prominent. Book writing, as some people have said, is like a sales brochure for your speaking engagements.
Right.
Then your speaking engagements are like sales pitches for your books, because if somebody's there and they like your work, they want to get more. They want to get the CDs. They want to get the audio downloads. They want to join your website. They want to join your membership site. Everything feeds together because, again, it all adds to your credibility, your accomplishments, that platform we were talking about carving. And so what happened for me was one book came out, and then I got more speaking engagements. The more speaking engagements I got, then the book companies wanted to publish another book of mine. When the book did pretty well, because I was out there speaking and publicizing it a lot, they wanted to publish more books. And so it added back and forth. And again, not everybody on this call wants to be an author, but you better get your name out there somewhere. If it's a media appearance, that adds to your credibility and the desire for your book. If you're writing a book and you want to do speaking, that will help. So I think that for me, I've been lucky in that way, in that one feeds on another, and it became synergistic. And the more, nothing succeeds like success. The more you have credibility and success, the more people want to buy. And I started out at, speaking for hundreds of dollars a day, and now it's up to thousands and thousands of dollars a day. And, I was a hippie when I was younger, and I never imagined I'd make money doing what I loved. And this shocks me still to this day that, wow, people pay me and I get to do what I love. And I've learned to write and be faster at it and be better at it, and I've learned the publishing field. So, again, they add together. That's, I think, what people need to do, is figure out a way to get your work out there in the world.
And when we place guests on television, radio, print, and online through our guest match service or through Allen Media Strategies, many times, Bill, as you know, the TV stations or radio stations, they're more than happy to plug your book, to show your book full screen there. As a matter of fact, it actually helps many of our clients get in the door, because that book becomes part of the credentialing. And one of the sort of brass rings, the major goals that we hear a lot from our clients is, I want to get on Oprah. And it's very, very difficult to do. And, of course, Oprah wrapping up her run this year after 25 years on top and taking over her own network. You've actually breathed that rarefied Oprah air. So I've got to ask you, how did that happen? Take us through that process.
Well, I know you as a publicist. I once heard a publicist talk about getting on Oprah, and she said, there's a number you can call, an 800 number you can call to get on Oprah, and everybody's poised with their pens, and she said, 1-800-PRAYER-LINE. I think that's how rare it seems. But, I got my books published, and first I got them published by smaller publishers because I was writing for the psychotherapy crowd, and those aren't so hard to get published. now when you go to the not quite as rarefied as Oprah, but the more rarefied fields of New York major publishers, you typically need an agent, and the money is much bigger, and the competition is much more. So you really have to have a better platform when you approach a major publisher or an agent, because they're not only going to be looking for the content of the book, they're going to be looking for your reputation, as you say, your credibility, your credentials, and your platform. So by the time I had done a few of these smaller books, I went looking for the agent. I found an agent who would represent my books, and they sold them to the major New York publishers. Well, you know what? I'm sure you've heard this, and I've heard this. People say, oh, you know, publishers don't do anything for authors anymore. You have to do all the publishing yourself. You know, you might as well self-publish because they don't do anything. Well, so I got a book contract with HarperCollins for a book called Do One Thing Different. And, you know, I, like every author, like you say, I say, okay, what will it take to get me on Oprah? I think this is the book that will do it for me. I really want to be on Oprah. And the publicist there, who's the in-house publicist, says, yes, Bill, all our authors want to be on Oprah, but it almost never happens, and don't get your hopes up.
Sure,
said.
A lot of yeah, whatever you
yeah, mean. Yeah. And I said, well, you know, I'm a pretty energetic and persistent guy. I'm willing to work at it. And she goes, no, we've had these authors that are so committed to it, they'll just call up and bug Oprah's staff. And she said, then Oprah threatens to ban all our books from her show because they're so put off by this person who's persistent and just won't go away, and they decide what books are going to be on. Okay, well, is there anything I can do? She said, well, you know, and then what are you going to do? She said, well, we're going to send a publicity packet, you know, press packet with the book there, and that's what we do. I said, nothing else? You know, like, you don't talk to them? She said, no, they're the Anaheim Pride Gorilla. They talk to you if they want to talk to you. So, okay. So about a month later, I get a call from the publicist, and she says, call an Oprah producer right now. Here's her number, and I'm going to get off the phone because she's going to go home in 15 minutes, and she wants to talk to you today. And, okay, I write it down. I call up, and this woman says, I read your book, and I loved it, and we'd like to have you on the show. Great. So we start talking, and I talk to her for a week or so. I call up the publicist the next day. I said, how did you do it? And she goes, I have no idea. I sent all the press pack and that following. So after I got to know the producer, who's the one who really puts together the show, not Oprah herself, her
right.
producer puts together the show and the assistant producer, and I said, you know, I'm just curious, how did this happen? Because the publicist at the publishing company didn't know. She said, well, it's an interesting story. She said, Oprah was really upset. We had the staff meeting to plan for this season. We were the preseason staff meeting, and she said, you know, last year we tried to empower our viewers, and that's what I'm all about. I want to empower my viewers. And she said, so we ended up sending, you know, their friends would say they're super busy and they don't have any time for themselves. They don't take care of themselves. So we end up sending the Mary Maids or the Molly Maids. We'd send a limo to take their kids to soccer, and we'd, you know, get their house a makeover, and we get them a makeover. And, you know, we'd get them a spa day. And she said, Oprah said, then we'd send the cameras back 3 months later. And these women would be depressed because their 15 minutes of fame was done. We hadn't changed their life in any way. We just gave them a brief respite from their unhappy lives. So she said, I want to do something this season where every show that we do is Change Your Life Television. And I want to change one thing in each show. I wanted our viewers to change one thing in each show. And my book had just arrived. The producer had it in her hands, and she held it up across the table, and it said, do one thing different. And Oprah said, perfect. That's what I'm talking about. Get it. So
wow.
It was kismet to a certain extent. But when I tell that story, it sounds like, oh, it's just an accident of fate, and you should just call 1-800-PRAYERLINE. But here's the point that I want to underline, and I think you and I are interested in telling people about. I got a book published. I got it published with a New York publisher. I had an agent, and I had a publicist at that who sent out the book and the press packet, and we put those press packet together, materials together, so they would establish credibility and visibility and the value of the book and the value of the book for the show. We really did some work. It wasn't just total random kismet fate in the universe. And like you're trying to do on this call and I'm trying to do on this call, I was committed to providing something really practical for people to change their lives. And it turns out Oprah was slightly interested in that too. And now she's got a network where she has 20 shows on. You have the possibility of getting on rather than one, which was really difficult to do. Now, I went on there, and it sold a boatload of books. It didn't make me rich, because those are the people who are in the Oprah Book Club who can buy new houses with it. But let's say I could have bought a couple of cars with what I made. That was a good thing. That was a good thing. And I could probably buy a house in Las Vegas, let's just say that, or Florida at this point I made in that with the real estate crisis. But, you know, I did do something. Some things, you know, you just got to put it out in the world and see what happens, I guess.
The holy grail of publicity, and Bill O'Hanlon got there on the Oprah show, and it was a life changer. And I think you speak to something that's very important that I'd like everyone who's listening today to realize. You have to have a seat at the table. You've got to be able to get to that point where, you know, the book is there for you to be booked. You've got to be positioned, if you're a speaker, to get on, you know, CNN or Fox News. You've got to have somebody in your corner to help you get there, or have the knowledge to do it on your own. And I think that's a big part of it, is actually taking that step forward. Bill O'Hanlon is our guest today. If you have a question for him, you can type it in at guestmatch.com/radio. That's guestmatch.com/radio. Now, when you did Oprah, of course, it sold a lot of books for you, yeah. But it also added to your platform. Then you could say, as seen on Oprah, and that led to a Today Show booking.
Right. And, you know, it's a funny thing because, you know, I grew up in a family of 8 kids. And you know, after my first book, my family was like, yeah, another book. Bill's written another book. Great. When I got on Oprah, they all sat up. And that wasn't just them. When I'm introduced as a speaker, they start to do the typical speech, you know, Bill, you hear this thing, and they say, and he was on Oprah with his book, do one thing. And I tell you, Berg, I hear people take audible gasps in the audience. And they sit up a little straighter, and I'm like, well, you know, even if I never got back on anything else in my life, you're right. That is a credibility builder and enhancer. People are impressed with that. If I can impress my brothers and sisters and my parents, then I can impress anybody, because they're totally unimpressed with me. But it impresses the people in the audience. They're saying, wow, maybe this guy is somebody we should listen to. Wow, he got on. Oh, it makes a difference. It's a real credibility enhancer to do that. Now, yes, I was on the Today Show twice, actually, and, you know, the experiences were very different, to tell you the truth. And, you know, you said in the description of this, you wrote the description of this, and I thought it was really interesting. You said, what was the experience of being on Oprah? Being on Oprah was not a comfortable experience. She wasn't very friendly. She wasn't very nice. And being on there sold a load of books and established my credibility. So I'm not complaining. But she wasn't very personable. I was a little surprised, because she can be so personal on the air and so empathic and really connective. She wasn't that great on the air. Now, maybe she was off that day. Who knows? But I went on the Today Show first with Katie Couric, and she was radically different. I mean, you know, again, it's a 6-minute segment. You're not going to be their best friend. And I don't want to be a stalker or anything, but she walks over from the couch. They call a commercial. She walks over from the couch because we're going to do an interview in a different part of the studio. And they're clipping on her mic, and they're fixing her makeup, and they're clipping on my mic. And she reaches over and says, thank you for coming today. We really appreciate you being here. And your book is a really interesting one. And, you know, boom, she sits down, very friendly. Oprah never said a word to me, never shook my hand, never said hi, except when we were on air. Now, then we get done with a 6-minute interview with Katie Couric. I stand up. She shakes my hand and says, very interesting stuff. We so appreciate you coming. Walks away. Again, it's not like I'm stalking her. She's my best friend. But she was so much more friendly. I'll tell you what the great part about Oprah was. The producers were great. My experience then was the producers are doing 90% of the work. Oprah shows up, and she's the personality, and they've prepared the show for her.
Right.
Those producers work their buns off. And what I learned from my producers, and this is interesting, and this may help people kind of get their foot in the door with the new Oprah Network and getting on one of those shows, the Gail King Show or something else, is that the producers are making a lot of the decisions about what gets presented to Oprah or to Gail or whoever it may be, and they're preparing a lot of the shows. So you want to pitch to the producers. And what I discovered from my producer is she was super busy. She had a 6-month-old kid, and she said, can you help me do one thing different? Because I have no time for my family and my job. And we talked about how she could make some changes in that. But I thought, you know, one of the things that would help that producer is to make her job easy. So when I learned to write books and pitch books, and when I learned to teach workshops and pitch workshops, and when I learned to go on television, I thought, I've got to put myself in that other person's shoes. What is their biggest problem, and how can I make, you know, it's like anything in sales or business. How can I do something of value for somebody else? Not, oh, will you have my book on your show? Will you hire me and pay me a lot of money to speak? No. What can I do for your conference? What can I do for your association? What can I do for your members? What can I do for your book publishing company? Can I sell books for you? I want to keep them in mind. And can I make your job easier? So one of the things I learned about TV shows is if you can pitch them some ideas, not just about your stuff, but about other people who are related to you. So if I go on and do a show on preventing divorce, I know three people who are in the marriage and family therapy field that I say, it's not just me. You should have so-and-so on, and they have a nice model about this or book about this. And I'm helping design the show for them and cut their workload in half. So thinking about who's the person who's going to hire you, whether it's a producer or the agent or the book publisher or the editor, how can you make their job easier and make them look good has really served me well. Like when I try and sell things, you know, you and I are going to talk a little about this because I've developed ancillary products about, you know, audios, downloads, and PDFs and online courses, and I do coaching. I want to serve my customer. And when I'm trying to publish a book or get on a television show or do a speaking engagement, the person who hires me or works with me is my customer.
That's fantastic advice, and you're absolutely right. If you can help them, then that's 90% of the battle. Bill O'Hanlon is our guest today, and I'm Burke Allen. If you have questions, type them in at guestmatch.com/radio. Gosh, you've done the Oprah show. You've done the Today show. You've written all these books. How is it that you then take this phenomenal exposure that you've generated for yourself and begin to monetize it? How do you sort of bring it all in? Because I'm a firm believer, Bill, that, you know, all of the buzz that you create out there in the world, I think that's a word that's sort of overused. If you can't really capitalize on it and monetize it and help to feed your family, you know, as a publicist, I don't think I've done my job right. So how do you begin to monetize it?
Well, I'll tell you a cautionary tale. Years ago, as many people did, I got really interested. This was many years ago. I got really interested in Tony Robbins stuff. And I subscribed to carbon dated, but it was a cassette tape series that he sent out called Power Talk that a few of you have probably seen or heard. And he sent it once a month, and it cost $30 or whatever it cost. I can't even remember what it was, but there was a subscription thing. And, you know, I really like this. He'd interview somebody, and he'd give you a tip, you know, that was an inspiration, typical Tony Robbins hype you up inspirational thing. And I enjoyed getting these things. I'd listen to him in my car while I was running, you know, things like that. And after a year and like 2 months, they just stopped coming. I never heard another word from Tony. I never got any other pitches from Tony. I was like, you know what? I like this stuff. Why aren't you pitching me something more? If somebody likes your stuff, they want to know more about it. And then, you know, after a while of being immersed in your stuff, maybe they move on to somebody else. But you're ripping yourself off and ripping them off if you don't give them a chance to connect with you and get more stuff from you. Not just my books, not my speaking engagements, but audios, videos, online courses, intensive trainings, boot camps, you know, online courses that I can deliver. And there are two things that occurred to me with that. Like you said, you can supplement your income if you give people more opportunity to connect you at whatever price point or involvement level, engagement level they want. Some people want to spend an intensive week with me, and they'll pay a lot of money and travel a long distance. Some people just want to listen to the 10-minute video and pay $6 for the thing. So I think you've got to give people a bunch of entry points because that'll enhance your credibility, spread your reputation. I've created an ebook that I give away. If you go on BillOHanlon.com and you sign up for my monthly newsletter and my mailings, I'll give you my free ebook, which is my favorite book that I've ever written out of the 32 books. And it's called A Lazy Man's Guide to Success. And it goes over some of the principles of how lazy, flaky, ADD me has been able to do 32 books and travel all over the world. And so, you know, people, once they get that, they give me permission, back to Seth Godin, permission marketing. They give me permission to contact them and say, here's the other stuff I've got if you're interested. If you're not, use the delete key, unsubscribe from the newsletter, or just don't read this one. And, you know, that's why Bill Gates and Steve Jobs invented the delete key. You can just easily delete that. And I keep in touch with people. I thought of for a while, you know, if I'm so smart, not only why aren't I rich, that's one question, but the other thing is the classic thing that people have is, if I'm so smart, why am I so busy is what I thought. I am so busy because now nothing succeeds like success. Everybody wants to hire me, and I'm writing another book, and I'm so busy. And I thought, well, one of the things, and you and I connected over one of our mutual acquaintances who taught about information marketing and passive residual income. So I started to put stuff online so I didn't have to show up. And, you know, obviously book publishing, you get royalties.
Right.
But also I wanted to control some of the intellectual content and put it online, have automated systems that sold it through shopping carts where I didn't even have to deal with people. Money just shows up in my shopping cart. So leveraging that reputation and that interest in your work and the buzz about your work so that passive and residual income comes in was part of what supports me as a speaker and a writer and makes it so I don't have to work so much if I don't want to. I'm still excited about my work, and I'm still, you know, relatively young, so I'm energetic about my work, but there'll come a time when I won't want to travel quite so much. Traveling is less fun than it used to be, as I'm sure everyone who's traveled recently knows. And I love this passive income where money just shows up in my account, and I'm contributing to people and helping people at the same time, and I have automated systems to handle, you know, set up to handle that, so it doesn't take so much more of my time. One-time creation, one-time setup, and with a little maintenance, it supplements what you do as a speaker and as a writer.
Well, you said two things are very key. One you expounded on, and that is different price points for people that so that they can participate with you and you can monetize things at a different income level, different investment level. The other thing I think that you sort of glossed over, but I want to make sure that the folks on the call are paying attention to, is that you provide things in different methods. People like to consume information and learn in different ways. So I'm a big fan of, in terms of monetizing your speaking career and your writing career, of offering things in different modalities. Some people like to learn, so audiobooks are great. Some people like to watch videos. Some people are experiential. They like to attend these live events. And, of course, there are folks that still like to read. So if you can provide things in different modalities, I think that increases your chances for success. Bill O'Hanlon is our guest today. I'm Burke Allen with Allen Media Strategies and GuestMatch.com. Are you ready for some questions from our listeners today?
Absolutely. Throw them at me, Burke.
All right, here we go. Hi, Mary Beth in Illinois. Thanks for your question, which is, with the plethora of authors and decreased print media, what suggestions do you both have for new experts or authors? Bill, I'll let you go first.
Well, you know, again, and I think, you know, Burke is going to talk about this as well, but providing something, you know, when I first started writing books, I got so excited about the ideas. I thought everybody's going to want to know about this idea. But really, people don't want to know about ideas. They want some solutions that diminish their pain or give them something they want. So always keeping, again, your audience in mind. What are they going to get value out of? And I think that's the first thing. Make sure you have a value proposition that you're offering something that people really want, not just something you're excited about, and positioning it in such a way and marketing and titling it in such a way. That's one thing. And the second thing is, you know, I don't have it. Burke's going to say more about this, but then it's a matter of, if you've got a value proposition and a valuable product and offering, the next thing is, it's all platform and visibility. The only people I see that succeed are not people who have great ideas, because there are a lot of people with great ideas, not people even who have great value to offer. It's the people who can let people know that they have that value. And I just didn't stop till I let people know that. I didn't know the stuff that Burke knows. I would have loved to know him early on, because I think I could have cut 10 years off my learning curve. And to tell you the truth, I think I left literally hundreds of thousands of dollars on the table in the 20, 30 years I've been doing this. If I'd known what Burke is telling you today, you know, and on his stuff, I would have saved a lot of money, and I would have been a lot more successful, even though I can't complain. I've been quite successful, and I'm doing fine. I think educating yourself about this stuff, about how to get your work out in the world, is the most crucial thing once you have the first part down, which is the product, the content, the valuable offer.
Well, thanks for the kind words. And Bill, you also teach people, you know, how to get their books published and how to speak successfully. And education is key. Mary Beth, I would say that don't be as concerned about the decrease in print media to help you get your work out there as an expert or an author. Remember that with the decrease in newspapers and magazines, and certainly it's very, very real, there's an uptick on digital media. As a matter of fact, last year, 2010, of the 36 new newspapers that debuted, half of them, 18, are digital only. So just look for those different digital modalities to get your work out there. Radio, although you don't hear about it that much anymore, radio still is very, very vibrant and actually has record cume numbers, record numbers of listeners. And you just include all of the different audio mediums there, you know, online radio and satellite radio and HD radio and AM and FM radio. So, you know, that's
And teleseminar radio is what we're doing right now. That's a certain kind of radio. It's an audio that's broadcast all around the world. And I will say this. I went on a 10-city book tour for one of my books where I flew around, and then I did a 40-city radio satellite tour, they call it.
Right.
And the books that sold because of the radio interviews were 10 times more than when I showed up live at bookstores.
Is that right?
Absolutely. No question. I thought, I'm not going to do this anymore. It's I travel all the time, but this is one day, one place. The next day, another place, and I thought, how do people do these? I'm exhausted. I travel 3 or 4 times a month, but this is every day for 10 days. You're in Chicago one day, Cleveland the next day, Dallas the next day, New York the next day. It's exhausting, and if it had worked, I would do it again. It didn't work, and it's really expensive. Radio, publicity, and TV, obviously, any mass media is way more effective. Now, again, you don't have to choose because, as you say, people like the live experience, they like the online experience, they like the, you know, radio experience, they like the television experience. Anything you can do to get your work out is good, but I found radio way more effective to sell books, not for speaking engagements, but to sell books and to raise my general visibility.
Well, and it is phenomenal, too. You can do those all, you know, from the comfort of your own home with your hair up in curlers if you want
to.
And so that works really well. It's a great question, though, Mary Beth. And the one other thing I would tell you is, along with what Bill said, you know, with print in decline, you'll find that reporters are very, very, very busy. There's a lot less of them putting their work together. They don't have time to fact check. They don't have time to read a big, long press release. You want to give them just the facts, ma'am, in an email and make their job easier. And let's go on to our next question here. And this is from, it looks like, Jail Ann McClurg in Louisville. I hope I got your name right. What should I think about first when using free publicity to brand myself? And I'll take this one first, and Bill, then you can jump in. One of the first things that I think you should think about is looking for something that's topical that you can tie into to generate or exponentially increase your chances to generate free publicity. Look for something that is trending. If you can tie in with a trend that's out there, then your release to the media is very brief. It's 3 paragraphs. The first paragraph is, here's who I am and what I do. The second is, here's why that's applicable to a big trend that's happening right now or something that's going on in the world that people are aware of. And the third paragraph is, and here's how you can contact me. And you'll be amazed at how quickly that free publicity can help to brand yourself. So if you can look for ways to tie into a trend and what you do and why that's relevant to a large number of people.
Well, I will write on that too, and I'll just underline what you said, Burke, and that is one of my books that I've got coming up, Stop Me Before I Write Again kind of thing, the 33rd or 34th book is going to be called Post-Traumatic Success. And it's about how do you come through a really challenging experience out the other side in a better way. There's research about it, and I have some ideas about it as well. And, you know, this New Zealand earthquake that just happened, it's a perfect opportunity to connect to it, not to be morbid or an ambulance chaser, but people want to know, what do I do when I go through one of these terrible things? And so I was thinking, okay, I'm going to contact – I have a little short version of it, an audio, and I'm going to be down in New Zealand and Australia in June doing some teaching. And I thought, I'm going to get my sponsor to contact some newspapers and television and radio stations right now, because this is the timely manner to do it, and talk to them about how are these people in New Zealand going to come through, and Australia's had fires and floods and tsunamis and stuff recently. So there's still a great deal of interest in how do you come through a traumatic experience. But as Burke said, I'm tying it to the news, not just, oh, I'm a cool guy who's got great ideas. You should listen to me. It's like, what's it? Years ago, Brian Tracy and other people say, everyone's tuned into the television station, WIIFM. What's in it for me? I want to, you know, tell people what's in it for them, not just I'm a cool guy and you should listen to me and I want you to buy my book. What are they going to get out of it? And if you can tie it to the news media are going to love it because they're going to get a new story out of it and they're going to not have to write the whole story. You're going to give them part of the content. And you're always thinking of what's in it for them. That's the television or radio station you should be tuned in, WIIFT, which is what's in it for them. And think of that and think of how to make their jobs easier and grab them by the lapels, like, you know, and keep it short because they're busy, as Bert said. You're going to write 3 pages about your great ideas. They're going to throw it in the trash. They're not going to have time to read 3 pages.
Bill O'Hanlon is our guest today, and he's right there on the same page in terms of keeping things brief, keeping them targeted, and trending things as well. Here's another great question. This is from Andrea Adams Miller. She's in Findlay, Ohio. As an authority on relationships, I really want to stand out as unique. What are shows looking for in a relationship and sexuality professional?
Well, you have a challenge, and, you know, again, Burke is your guy for this, and he's going to say something about it, I'll bet, because there are so many – it's like diet books. There's so many diet books or diet experts or, you know, health experts. You got to stand out from the crowd. So it's somehow making your message unique, a unique slant of things, and I bet you do have a unique slant of things. But sometimes when I've gone to pitch my books to New York publishers with my agent, they'll say, we've read this book before, Bill. And I say, no, you actually haven't. And they go, yeah, we have. This book's been published. And then I realize I haven't done my job in communicating to them, no, this is a different approach, because I've written 3 books about relationships. I was trained as a marriage and family therapist, and I went out with my book, the one I went on the 10-city book tour, and I'm telling you, the look on people's faces on TV and on the radio is another relationship sexuality book. Good. Here's this guy. You know, they were all totally uninterested, and I realized I didn't do my job to get across how unique my approach was. Love is a Verb was the name of the book, and it was, love isn't just a feeling, it's a set of actions. And it's like a garden. Here's my elevator pitch and my high concept. Burke is going to recognize this. Love isn't just a feeling, which most people think it's either there or it's not. It's like a garden. You have to cultivate it and weed it. And Love is a Verb is a book about the actions you can take to create and maintain love. And that's why it's different from every other book that's out there on the market. Boom. I wish I'd had that elevator pitch when I went out, because I didn't have it as clearly in my mind what differentiated my approach from all the other relationship sexuality approaches that were out there.
I think you're exactly right. And, Andrea, the piece that I would add on is that I'd like for you and the other folks on the call to jot these 2 words down, and they are unique and compelling. What is unique and what is compelling about what you do? It needs to be unique, so it can't be what everyone else is doing out there, but it also has to be compelling. It has to have enough of a mass compelling aura about it that there will be people that say, I'm interested in that. I want to find out a little bit more. So if you can find a way to niche yourself out by being unique and yet compelling, I think you'll hit home runs there. We have a lot of folks on the call, Bill, who are members of our guestmatch.com service, mm-hmm. which is an online media kit, an online press kit, and we invite media members to come and sample it all the time, thousands of them every week. I just spoke to a Fox News producer on Tuesday who had come to Guest Match. She was looking for someone to comment on a very topical story and couldn't find someone in our Guest Match database to do that. So the other tip that I would give the folks on this call is to make sure that you continually update your materials to, you know, watch for news as it breaks. You had mentioned the New Zealand story. If you know, wow. Andrea, you're in Ohio, there's a big labor issue there right now. Is there some way to tie in, you know, your relationship therapy to this labor issue in Ohio right now? Do Google alerts for your areas of expertise and have them pop up to give you fresh and new ideas. Bill, you, and I touched on this earlier, you teach people how to get their book published, and I believe you also teach people how to get more speaking opportunities. How do folks go about, you know, hiring you or asking you those questions? And by the way, you've got them for another 10 minutes, so ask the questions for free now.
Yeah, that's right.
Type them into us. And you can also, if you'd like to ask a question out loud, hit star 2 to raise your virtual hand and we'll put you into the call. But how do folks go about engaging your services, and what do you actually teach people?
Well, you know, again, I'm trying, if I'm so smart, why am I so busy? I love so many things about what I do, and I decided to be less busy. So I've been putting stuff online. I've been doing online coaching, and so I have two sites that you could go to check it out. I also have a book on writing, which is called Write as a Verb, which is published by Writer's Digest. But you can go to publishingabook.com, which is the site that Fred Gleick and I put together on coaching people. He's an expert on self-publishing. I'm an expert on print publishing, to coach people how to get their books either print published or self-published or both, and e-published as well. And we will simplify the process, and we coach people for that. And the second one is called Paid Public Speaking, which I share. You know, again, I didn't know how to do this. Nobody else coached me. I didn't have a Burke Allen to tell me how to do some of this stuff. So I just had to stumble along and not know for a long time and then start to figure it out. And I think that's what makes me a pretty good coach about this stuff, because I wasn't a natural author. I wasn't a, you know, jump out of Zeus's head like a best-selling author or a successful speaker. I had to really work at this. It wasn't natural for me. I didn't know how to do it. And I like to figure out the patterns of things. So I just paid attention to what worked for me, and then I've coached a bunch of other people to become speakers or to become published authors or get agents and get their book published. So those are the two ways that people can do it. But, you know, you might learn enough from this call that you could get started. But the key is, you know, what Burke's doing more than, you know, most people can write a book, but they don't know how to get it published, and they don't know how to get the word out about it out there. That's the more challenging part for people.
And as much information as there is, folks, out there online now that's available for free, and Bill and I are both big fans of giving free information out. I'm a firm believer that you want to pay it forward and help people. They'll remember you for that. You can surf around and get lots of great ideas. I know that our friends at Speaker Match, who helped put this call together today, release a wonderful magazine called Behind the Podium that all Speaker Match members receive, Bill, and that thing is just chock full of great information to help people get more paid public speaking engagements. And so, you know, grab a highlighter and go through the newsletter Behind the Podium and, you know, highlight the actionable items and do just a couple of those every day to help you get more speaking engagements. And, you know, learn from people like Bill O'Hanlon, who's obviously done something right. He's published 30-some books. What is next for you in terms of your career, and is it still enjoyable? I mean, doing these TV shows and writing these books, is it still fun for you?
It is. Again, you know, if you tap into your primal energy that, you know, why are you doing this thing? It can't be just about money. I mean, it's nice to earn money, and you got to have things viable, but if it's just about money, you'll burn out, I think. You have to have a deeper and broader motivation than that. And I, you know, like you do, Burke, I think, I love contributing to people and doing what I love and am excited about, and you know, finding the intersection between what I love, what I think will contribute to people, and what's of value to the world, making the world a little better place and helping people figure out what they're here for and succeed at it. And, you know, I just go back to your earlier point. Burke's not being paid a boatload of money to do this call. In fact, zero. I'm not being paid any money to do this call. Why are we doing this? I mean, partly to get our names out there and to get our work out there, and partly because we like to contribute to people. And, you know, if you read Chris Anderson's book, Free, there's a very compelling case for when you're unknown, as some of the questions were asked, what do you do when you're unknown? Nobody knows who you are. How are you going to get started? Well, one of the ways is to give stuff away for free, and don't worry about the money coming right now. You have to worry about it ultimately, and you have to find a way to support yourself. But contribute to people, give them value, and they'll ask you more. I'll bet by being on this call, I will get some queries about my whatever work I'm doing, or I'll sell a few more books. That's good enough for me. And if I get even more, you know, paid work, somebody asks me to be a keynote speaker somewhere and pays me lots of money, that's terrific. I gave away that free ebook, Lazy Man's Guide to Success, somebody read it because a friend of theirs gave it to him, invited me to Switzerland. I taught for 3 days in Switzerland for thousands of dollars. And I wasn't expecting that. I just gave away the book. But it was nice that it happened because I got my name out there. I got my valuable work out there. And I didn't worry about the money initially. The money comes in the back end if you're providing value.
And doing these free media interviews, I mean, that's a good time. Going to New York and being on the Today Show and going
Absolutely.
Behind the scenes at Oprah. So you should enjoy the process.
Well, they send a limo for you and they put you up in a really nice hotel with these big shows too. So that's kind of fun.
Absolutely. You get to talk to a lot of really fun, interesting people when you do the radio interviews too.
Absolutely.
We have a caller we're going to try to sneak in before we run out of time. Caller from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Oh,
Albuquerque, you're on
my home
air.
State. My
that's
home
right.
state.
Oh, well, great. Then you know how nice it is today out here in Albuquerque.
No, because I'm in Marco Island, Florida, but you're having nice weather. And the last couple of weeks, we've had really cold weather, haven't we?
Yes, yes, and I've hit all of them. And that goes to my question. I am new at speaking. I did write a book on Remember the Bible. I'm trained as a memory speaker, and I've also have a background like you, a marriage and family therapy, and was a parent coach and kind of took my show on the road, if you will. And I'm trying to use the memory training to work with educators and homeschoolers and change kind of our educational situation in America by teaching children learning differently. So that's the long story. So what I've been doing is applying to conferences, trying to get a little bit of the credibility that you talked about, getting my name out there. However, what I'm finding is a lot of the advice I'm getting is, you know, they have to pay you before you come. But a lot of the, because I went towards a religious niche, a lot of the educating conferences I go to give you an honorarium or my last honorarium was Gardelli chocolates and a coffee mug.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I still have to survive on all this. And my book is sort of selling, at least all the bookstores. A lot of these are held in churches. The bookstores at those churches are now carrying my books. But, I mean, what would you – how do I eventually get to actually making money doing that?
Well, I think, again, what Burke mentioned earlier, you better have – while you're in this phase of things where you're not getting paid very much, and, again, the population you're working with, they don't always have a lot of money. But when you raise to the level of a Rick Warren or something like that, they're paying those people thousands of dollars a day. Tens of thousands of dollars a day sometimes. So you have to start out where you are, and you give it away for free to a certain extent, but you better support yourself, as you're saying. Those ancillary products, you know, the ones that are audios, you know, CDs, DVDs, videos, ebooks, you know, coaching over the phone for people who are working with their kids, maybe a coaching group for parents who want to apply this with their kids. And you charge them a little amount of money for each phone call, but there's 10 people on the call, so together they make up a good hourly fee for you for spending that time on the call. You've got to figure out some things to support you until it hits to a level that they're actually paying you for the book selling well enough and the speaking is lucrative enough that you can afford to, you know, to do it. I think that's the key, but Burke may have something else.
No, I think that's great advice, Bill, and I would add to that caller that make sure you've got your systems in place to capture email addresses
and capture data whenever
you go out and do these speeches for free or for very little money so that people will be able to contact you and you can contact them, and it will be like a snowball rolling forward, but you need to have your systems in place.
Well, I think that's right. I just need to say one more thing. That's what I was saying. I left so much money on the table. For 15 years, I didn't have ways for people to connect with me, and also they didn't have all this online stuff or email management stuff. But I learned these things like Burke has been talking about of getting people to give me permission to contact them, giving me their names as part of an exchange. You know, they want information or free stuff or valuable stuff, and that's made all the difference in my ongoing income.
And, gosh, had you had it all together there in the beginning?
Yeah, that's right.
The two websites, and I want to make sure that I jotted these down because I'm going to surf over there and visit them myself. For Bill O'Hanlon, if you'd like to reach out to him, are publishingabook.com and paidpublicspeaking.com. Did I get those correct?
Paidpublicspeaker.com. Thank you.
Paidpublicspeaker.com. And by the way, if you'd like more information on any of our services at guestmatch.com, be sure to stop by and visit. You can always call our office, too, at 703-589-8960. We're here in Washington, D.C. And for all the folks at Speaker Match, Brian and Paul and their whole gang there for putting this call together, we certainly thank you very much. We will have, by the way, the links to Bill's websites in the show notes at guestmatch.com/radio after we wrap up today. For our special guest, Bill O'Hanlon, who is a published author and speaker, I'm Burke Allen in Washington, D.C. Thanks for listening to Speaker Match Radio and Guest Match Radio today. Now, go out and have a great day.
Hi. Hi. Lovely to see you.